This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Happy March, and welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and there are signs of spring. I found my first snowdrops in my garden, so that was very heartening.
Well, I took a picture of it, and it's up on the Foundation's web Facebook page, isn't it?
No.
Oh, the Twitter page. We put it up somewhere.
My personal Twitter page, Dan.
Okay, you can look for that. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. And for another week, Annie Laurie is doing the show seated in a chair because her ankle is still sprain. Now, this is really tough for a person who's used to putting her foot down about a lot of issues, especially separation of church and state issues. This is the weekend of March the 3rd, 2012, which means that tomorrow is a command. Can you figure out why? You don't know. Tomorrow is March 4th.
I've only heard this for 25 years.
Oh, well, you were
giving the listeners a chance.
Oh, well, you were staring
think.
At me like you didn't. You're
I wasn't.
What? Okay, listeners were staring too. March 4th. So we should march forth in the mission to keep our government separate from religion and to promote the views of non-theists, atheism, agnosticism. Most of the members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the producer of this show, by the way, call themselves free thinkers, which are atheists, agnostics. We are a part of the country, too. We are a part of the fabric of America, and this show is dedicated to those of you who are not dedicated to religion.
And we will be marching forth. Hopefully, I'll be marching at the Reason Rally on Saturday, March 23rd, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and FFRF's dinner parties in segment two. But we do want to let you know that if you stay tuned, you will listen and hear Jim McCollum, a returning guest, one of the members of that very elite club of freethinkers who have been part of Victoria's Supreme Court decisions upholding the wall of separation between church and state. And Jim is a retired attorney living in Arkansas, and he was the little boy who was the reason why his mother took McCollum versus Board of Education, the Supreme Court decision that came down in 1948 to rid public schools of religious indoctrination during the school day. So we're going to have a reunion with Jim McCollum, talk a little bit more about the Rhode Island case involving Jessica, the young woman that just won a federal decision, and catch up with what he's been doing.
And, you know, we've been talking a lot about religion in the schools. Last week it was the Good News Club and then Jessica Aquist before that. And I don't know if you know this, but just this week I got a phone call from the anonymous Doe plaintiff who we used to win our lawsuit in Tennessee about religion in the classrooms in the fifth grade. Well, the father now lives in another state and called and says, guess what? My daughter came home from science class in her middle school with a creationist material handed to her by the teacher. So our legal department
will be going after that.
We'll be looking into that. And we're going to be putting up an FAQ on creationism in the public schools, in public school science classrooms. So it'll be fun to talk with Jim 64 years later after his famous McCollum decision came down. So does Rick Santorum still feel like throwing up? We know what he's been saying about the separation of church and state. And some people are suggesting that he is the closest thing we've ever heard or seen toward a theocracy in the United States. Was it on ABC this week?
George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. Why don't we listen to that famous clip?
Spoken out about the issue of religion and politics. And earlier in the campaign, you talked about John F. Kennedy's famous speech to the Baptist ministers in Houston back in 1960. Here's what you had to say.
Very late in my political career, I had the opportunity to read the speech, and I almost threw up. You should read the speech.
That speech has been read, as you know, by millions of Americans. Its themes were echoed in part by Mitt Romney in the last campaign. Why did it make you throw up?
Because the first line, substantive line in the speech says, I believe in America where the separation of church and state is absolute. I don't believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. The idea that the church can have no influence or no involvement in the operation of the state is absolutely antithetical to the objectives and vision of our country.
Now, he was responding, of course, to JFK as a candidate, his famous address to the Protestant ministers in Houston in 1960, in which he said, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. And we even have that on a bus sign. And let's hear his own words.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute.
And he's absolutely right about that. Santorum has got it wrong. There should be, at the level of government, a strict separation, an absolute separation between church and state, which is the only way to guarantee an absolute freedom of religion and religious opinions at the private level, among we the people who have our points of view. If the government gets involved, they were afraid back in Kennedy's candidacy. A lot of Protestants were afraid because would he owe allegiance to the Vatican over the United States government? And Kennedy very rightly was trying to say, listen, my religious views are irrelevant to the government.
Well, Santorum, I guess let's listen to that comment again.
I don't believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute.
Now, we played that very gross clip that he wants to puke when he hears this speech by JFK on a previous show, and I'm glad that George Stephanopoulos called him on it. But what a come down since 1960 that we have candidates today who are doing the opposite, who can't wear religion on their sleeves more, who are trying to outdo each other in promoting theocracy.
But just to disagree is one thing, but to say he wants to vomit, he wants to puke over something so precious to all of us, that really shows his underlying agenda of wanting to mix religion and government.
And speaking of mixing religion and government, we have a lot of complaints going on in Alabama, including over the government prayer at the Huntsville City Council. And we also have a complaint in Marshall County, Alabama, over school board prayer, where they're praying to Jesus before they start the school day, as well as other violations. And there's been a lot of coverage. Let's listen to one. This is 48 News.
Keep on praying. That's a word tonight from Marshall County school leaders.
That's right. WFA 48 Stephen McLam talked to school leaders about coming under fire from a Wisconsin group opposed to their prayers before board meetings.
Father, we just pray that you be with this business meeting.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation is now seeking to stop prayer before board meetings at the Marshall County School Board. Superintendent Tim Neighbors freely admits he leads every meeting with prayer.
We deal with children on a daily basis, and we need all the direction and the guidance we can get.
As we reported first on Friday, the organization is also seeking to have the word God removed from the student handbook.
That was put in there by a committee, not by me.
Richard Beechert has three children in the Marshall County school system and wonders why there's concern with having prayer.
If Congress can start with prayer every meeting, why can't the Board of Education?
I guess if a judge comes in here with a ruling saying that you'll stop, then we'll consider it at that point.
The superintendent also says it's about time people fight for their values.
Took a stand for what's right and not let just a few tell us what we are and we're not
going
to do.
Neighbor says he's not going to give the group a written reply.
In Jesus' name we pray.
Only a spiritual one.
Do you plan to pray for them?
Absolutely. I'll definitely pray for them.
In Marshall County, Stephen McLam, WAFF 48 News.
I mean, can you believe that? This is a public school board paid for with tax dollars representing everybody, and they're not even going to deign to reply. I mean, we will be pursuing this. There's two appeals court decisions expressly saying that public school boards should not begin with prayer for obvious reasons, because this sets the tone. They often have students in their audience. Because they should be praying on their own time. They shouldn't be using public meetings to proselytize.
So we should ask our attorneys, Rebecca or Patrick or Stephanie or Andrew, to stop waiting for the reply, to ask them if they feel any prayers coming their way from Alabama.
Well, and then there are other violations that we are nailing them on, so I think they can't ignore us. But this does bring us to your song, Dan. We have often played teasers of it, but we haven't played the whole thing for a long time. Beware of Dogma.
And by the way, you asked for this song a few years ago, and what better style than a style that was officially outlawed by the church? The tango was sensuous and sinful and not to be danced. And of course, everybody wanted to dance the tango after they came out against it. So here is Beware of Dogma in a tango style.
Beware of dogma, it has a bite. Beware of dogma, it wants a fight. Beware of dogma, it will ignite a holy war by itself. Beware of dogma, it'll trap your mind. Religious dogma, it'll make you blind. Beware of dogma, it's not designed to let you think for yourself. If we let it out in the universe, there will be no doubt, everything is worse. Beware of dogma, don't let it loose, that unchained dogma. It'll reproduce, tie up your dogma. There's no excuse for ignorance anymore. Has a bite.
Beware of dogma.
It wants a fight.
Beware of dogma.
It will ignite a holy war by itself.
Beware of dogma.
It'll trap your mind.
Religious dogma.
It'll make you blind.
Beware of dogma.
It's not designed to let you think for yourself. If we let it out,
if we let it out
in the universe,
for universe,
there will be no doubt,
there will be no doubt,
everything is worse,
the very worst. Beware of dogma,
don't let it loose,
that unchained dogma.
It'll reproduce,
tie up your dogma.
There's no excuse
for ignorance anymore.
Please clean up after your dogma.
Did you hear me barking on that? That was actually my trained Barker barking on that show. I actually also played the real accordion for that, an old accordion that was down in the basement that I used to play on my missionary trips in Mexico.
It says Jesus Saves on it.
And it said Jesus Only on the
or
front
Jesus
of it.
Only.
The engineer, Buzz Kemper, was laughing about that. Half of the wax had been melted, but it worked for the tune. Beware of Dogma. So stay tuned. We are going to come back with more music. We're going to talk about marching forth into another month of state church activism.
And we'll have details about the Reason Rally coming up at the end of this month. You've got to make plans soon if you want to attend and to attend our dinner parties.
And after the break, we're going to hear a young new singer-songwriter from Australia whose album is called An Atheist Album. Her name is Shelley Siegel. So I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gillard.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join us today at FFRF.org. Now, we want to also invite you to attend. We have two dinner parties. The main one is Saturday night around the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. at the Washington Court Hotel. On Saturday, March 24th, we're giving Emperor Has No Clothes Award to the very well-known atheist progressive author Barbara Ehrenreich, who has not addressed one of our events since 1999. And we have almost filled up with our dinner party the night before at the Phoenix Park Hotel.
On Friday the 23rd.
With Ellery Shump. You can look up all that information. Sign up today at ffrf.org/reasonrally. And you can find out more about the entire event taking place on Saturday, March 24th in Washington, D.C.
And on Friday night, we will be joined by Shelley Siegel, who's going to be performing at the Reason Rally, but she's going to perform for us the night before. She's a young, new singer-songwriter out of Australia, and here is a clip from her recent album called An Atheist Album. And that is Shelley Siegel singing I Don't Believe in Fairies from her album, An Atheist Album, a young singer-songwriter from Australia. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be talking again with Jim McCollum, the son in the famous 1948 McCollum versus Board of Education landmark lawsuit.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We have on the phone with us from Arkansas one of our favorite free thinkers, Jim McCollum, who is in that very elite category of people who have won or helped to win Supreme Court decisions, keeping religion out of government, keeping religion out of schools. And it's Jim McCollum. He is a retired attorney who is actually teaching, he tells us, a constitutional law class at the Southern Arkansas University, and who better? And he's also a lifelong learner. He, in his new career, I guess, is getting a Bachelor of History and a minor in religious studies from Southern Arkansas University as well. And we are going to talk about the very famous McCollum versus Board of Education case, which is the bedrock. It's the landmark decision. It's the decision that all the other cases in the Supreme Court rest on when it comes to keeping religion out of our public schools.
And this was 1948 when the decision came down, and Jim was a youngster at that time.
Welcome to back to Free Thought Radio, Jim.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How old were you when all this started again?
I was 9 years old when I first ran into the problem in fourth grade, but the case was filed when I was 11, I believe, 10 or 11.
I know we've talked about it before, but can you describe what was the problem in the Champaign, or it was Champaign, Illinois public school system?
Well, somewhere along the middle of the early 40s, they instituted a program of, quote, voluntary, unquote, religious instruction, and it started in junior high school, if I recollect properly. But it worked its way down through the grades to the fourth grade, the same year I got to fourth grade. And it was, as I say, supposedly voluntary, but the teachers had a certain amount of motivation to get everybody involved. And my particular teacher not only hassled me about not being in the class, but also my parents.
And I know that your mother actually wrote a book about it, One Woman's Story, One Woman's Fight, about taking this case, and goes into a great deal of the detail. It's an extraordinarily easy read about what this did to your family. But
and we published that book, by the way.
It's reprinted.
One Woman's Fight by Vashti McCollum.
But, you know, let's go over those details again. I know that you begged to go into the class because, of course, you were getting peer pressure.
Well, when I was in fourth grade, I was in a grade school that there wasn't an awful lot of controversy as far as the kids were concerned, so I didn't get much of a hassle for not being in the class. But I was curious as to what it was all about. And between pressure from my teacher on my parents and pressure from me, my folks finally relented and let me take the class. But it was very rudimentary. The materials were really aimed at kindergartners, not fourth graders. And so consequently, I just thought it was pretty silly and asinine. And by the way, up to that point, religion really hadn't been discussed much at all, if at all, in our family. So I didn't go in with any great prejudices.
So what was it? Like Noah's Ark and Jesus Loves Me and all that kind of stuff?
That kind of stuff. And it had little handouts that we colored and all that sort of stuff. It really was kindergarten stuff.
It was so Sunday school time, kindergarten stuff.
Yeah.
Well, not a very sophisticated Sunday school. But in any case, by the time the year was over, and I went into fifth grade, which in this case changed schools because we were right on the edge of the catchment district between these two schools, and I guess the school I was in was crowded, so they shifted me over to this Dr. Howard school. I had no interest in getting into the class.
And so you, but everybody was taking these classes except you.
That's correct.
And they had a class. Did they have a class for Jewish kids and a class for Catholic and a class for Protestant? Is that how it was grouped?
Well, there were very few Catholics in Champaign at the time. I guess there was a Catholic class, but I never ran into it. The Jews were smart. They pulled out ahead of time, and they decided not to have a class. And as a matter of fact, there's one Jewish boy that I knew that was a couple grades behind me that was severely beaten to the point where his glasses that were in one of these hardened glasses cases were broken. I caught a little bit of hassle at the time, but nothing like he did.
Well, your mom wrote about how some of you boys, it was you and your two brothers, how you were hassled and persecuted and maybe chased home and called names.
Well, I was.
Yeah.
My little brother was too young to be involved in any of that, so he escaped the whole thing. My brother Dan got a little bit of prejudice thrown his way, but I was the one who was really chased home and had a few encounters, so to speak.
So what made your mother file suit? What was the moment there where she realized she had to go to court?
Well, she went to the superintendent of instruction and complained about the class. He seemed to be somewhat sympathetic, but as he indicated, his hands were tied, essentially. And it became clear that administrative remedies were not available. And she was apparently the Unitarian minister in Urbana, Champaign-Urbana, Twin Cities, had apparently done a sermon on the issue. And so she got in touch with him, and he was able to go to Chicago and find a group of Jewish businessmen that were willing to finance a case. And consequently, the case was sued out in the summer of 1945 as I was going into sixth grade.
And this is because they were putting all this pressure on you to stay in the class. And
well, no, by that time there wasn't any pressure for me to be in the class. I was back at Southside School, which so I didn't have much in the way of hassle there. I did get hassled quite a bit when I the following year when I went to junior high school, and that's when my parents decided to send me to Rochester, New York to go to a private school.
Well, they were putting you in the hall. They were treating you like you were in detention.
You that was fifth grade.
You were being razzed by people passing you in the hall. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that was fifth grade at this Dr. Mm-hmm. Howard school. The demographics there were quite a bit different than the Southside school, unfortunately.
Now, we have some clips from the documentary that was aired last year on PBS, The Lord Is Not on Trial Here Today, all about your case. And I think Dan has queued these up in, I hope, proper order.
I think we should say one of the reasons we're inviting you back on the show this month is that this month, that's going to be rebroadcast.
In some PBS markets and on HD radio, people should go to their website and see if they can find it listed.
It's called The Lord Is Not on Trial Here Today.
And you were interviewed, and your mother, in her 90s, was interviewed.
Well, she was asked about how courageous it was to take this case. Listen to what she says.
People speak about my courage and so forth. Not particularly. I did what I had to do. As Dan says, sometimes our culture picks on the wrong person at the wrong time. I was fortunate in that I could do something about it. And that I didn't think twice, I did.
And what a story. She sued and lost and lost and lost and lost until it went clear to the Supreme Court.
You could only lose twice, Dan.
Well, but she lost at the appealing to the school itself, right?
Yeah.
So she and she just kept on going.
And I think, well, what do we have here, Dan?
Well, the day that the victory came down from the U.S. Supreme Court, and she was standing by that old phone waiting for it to ring to find out what the decision was. Did they win or not?
As you know, the Supreme Court usually hands down rulings on a Monday. Every Monday, I was pretty close to the telephone. On that particular Monday, I got the call.
It was cloudy and cold on March 8, 1948, when the call finally came. For Vashti McCollum, 3 years of what she described as headlines, headaches, and hatred were about to reach their conclusion, one way or another. It was a resounding 8-1 decision. The religion classes had been ruled unconstitutional. It was the first ever violation of the Establishment Clause and the first time in American history that the Supreme Court prohibited a religious activity in a public school. It was the beginning of the separation of church and state in public schools.
So, Jim, next week will be the 64th anniversary.
March the 8th is when it came down.
Yeah, of
That's right.
that decision. So congratulations.
So we can,
again.
We can almost guess your age from that, but we're not gonna try. So you're still, after all of this, you're teaching constitutional law, but you're actually a part of the history books that you're teaching. How does that feel going before a class of youngsters and teaching? Have you come up on state church yet?
I introduced myself at the beginning of the semester by playing that documentary.
Ah. And it had pictures of you as a young boy in that documentary.
And you're interviewed. And, I would think you would command quite a bit of respect among your students. I have to say... Oh, go ahead.
Who knows? My mother, by the way, was named after a biblical heroine. And she lived up to the name.
Yes, the first, she was a woman rebel.
That's Vashti was her name, V-A-S-H-T-I.
One of the few feminists in the Bible, first exponent of women's rights in the Bible. Now, we do, I think we would like to just go out of this segment with one more clip. And this is where we don't like to downplay, I mean, I don't like to go overboard on it, but your mother talks about how you were persecuted. Let's listen to that.
Well, at Dr. Howard's school in particular, it was pretty hostile, and I had several fights and hassles. I remember one time they chased me all the way home.
He was beaten up more than once on the way home from school. He liked to go to the Y after school and do some swimming. They took his shoes away from him. He walked home in the snow without his shoes.
One classmate remembers things being even worse. I watched my classmate James McCollum being victimized repeatedly, remembers William Sholem in a letter sent years later to his brother. I saw him verbally abused and badly beaten in a school environment where bullying was otherwise absent. I cannot remember the exact epithets used against James, but memory of the place, the hate in my classmate's eyes and actions, and the tears are etched in my memory as if I was there today. Mrs. McCollum knew she had to do something to protect her oldest son. In the spring of 1945, she reached a decision that would forever change the lives of her and her family. She would sue the Champaign, Illinois Board of Education to try to put a stop to the religion classes.
Now, what made us think of you again, Jim, was the experience of Jessica Ahlquist, who just fortunately has won her federal court ruling, is going to stand against this prayer banner in her Cranston, Rhode Island high school. Now, I know you were watching that case from afar very
Absolutely.
Carefully. What feelings did that bring back?
Well, fortunately... For me, I was just along for the ride. My mother was the one that took the public heat, pretty much. She was the one that prosecuted the case. This lady in Connecticut, however, she is one brave lady, and I'm really impressed with the stand that she was willing to take.
Oh, Jessica in Rhode Island.
Oh, that's right.
Rhode Island.
Connecticut's where she finally got the flowers from.
That's right. That's where they finally delivered the flowers from. So you, I know that you and Ellery Shemp and, you know, some of the Deborah Weissman, who've all won these Supreme Court decisions, were all watching very carefully what was going on there. So what do we have coming up, Dan?
Well, we're going to talk with Jim a little bit more after the break, but I remember reading in Vashti's book that during this whole time, their favorite song of the family was the Cole Porter song called Don't Fence Me In. And that was the attitude of the family. They didn't want to be fenced in.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide country that I love. Don't fence me in.
It's the Andrews Sisters, which were popular in the mid-1940s. And we'll be right back. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio, and we'll continue our conversation with Jim McCollum, who was one of the plaintiffs in the famous McCollum Supreme Court decision.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
They heard this down in Piggly Wiggly down there in Main Street. They're going to lynch you. Oh, I said, is that all?
That was the inimitable Vashti McCollum being interviewed for the documentary that is going to be re-airing on some PBS stations around the country starting in March. The Lord is Not on Trial Today. It's produced by Jay Rosenstein, and he has interviewed our guest, Jim McCollum, his mother, Vashti. That was the last interview probably before she died in her 90s, and other principals in the case involving the Supreme Court decision, McCollum versus Board of Education, the landmark case that first ruled indoctrinational instruction in the public schools to be unconstitutional.
And this week, March the 8th, is the 64th anniversary of that decision. So Jim, your family truly is a part of important American history. Now, we were talking earlier, you are still in school and you're teaching constitutional law. And I want to know what you think. Have students changed in the last 64 years or even since you started teaching constitutional law?
Well, I don't know how I had very few problems when I was an undergraduate at Illinois, so I can't really compare with that. But in the 18 years that I've been down here in Arkansas, it's amazing how open-minded the students have become in that relatively short period. The student body was very homophobic when he first got here, and now we have gay, lesbian, bisexual club, not a big problem, and it's just not an issue here anymore.
And their attitude towards religion and government, has any of that come up in the last few years?
Well, my wife teaches the religious studies classes here at Southern Arkansas University, and in the past I audited those classes. Now I'm actually taking them for grade because that's part of my minor. And I find the students that are taking those classes generally are very open-minded.
So there has
been... Every one of them is a Christian except me.
So
really?
There has been something of a shift in tolerance towards diversity in this country then.
No, we probably should...
Apparently so, at least among the young folks.
We probably should correct a misstatement in the last segment inadvertently. You were identified as being a plaintiff in McCollum versus Board of Education, but you weren't needed to be a plaintiff. Your mother was the plaintiff, correct?
Yeah, she was, the technical term was relator, because it was a mandamus action.
Oh, it was a mandamus action.
So you just got to go along for the ride.
That's a common law writ that last time I knew was still law in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. We only have a couple minutes left, but I'd like to listen to, I think it's your mother. This clipping is of your mother talking about your family's view on religion.
Pam and I talked about our lack of religious convictions before we were married. One of the things probably that brought us together. And there was no question in our mind we didn't want any part of it.
And we've also interviewed Vashti for our own documentary at FFRF, Champions of the First Amendment. We've played some of those clips in the past, and I remember her talking about if you're going to have religion in the schools, well, whose religion? How can that ever work? So what a very wonderful bequest to the world, to at least to legal history, that your mother has left us.
Well, thank you, Jim, for being on the show. It's always fun to talk with you, and it's fun to get all those jokes that you send me every few days by email.
I clean the ones up I send your way.
Oh, you do? Well, some of them aren't that cleaned up. But anyway, thanks for being on the show.
Well, very nice to talk with you again. That was Jim McCollum. Look for The Lord Is Not on Trial Here Today, PBS documentary about what happened to Jim when there was religion in the schools in Champaign, Illinois.
And thank you, Dave McCann, our producer engineer, who just celebrated his 11th birthday on Leap Day, and Buzz Kemper, our announcer. Find out more at ffrf.org/radio.
Go to ffrf.org and tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday